The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to today's live edition of the Retirement and IRA Show. Yes, we are broadcasting live over the internet. Looks like we've got a couple of listeners so far. Hopefully a few more will join us. I know we're starting a few minutes late, had some technical difficulties with Comcast. Well, we have a technical difficulty with Jim not turning his microphone
some
on as well.
I always do that. Comcast is out like nationwide.
Yeah, so it's not just us this time. Usually it's just us.
But, is it nationwide or Colorado-wide?
No, it's the bunch of metro areas across the country right now are having some issues with Comcast.
What if they've been hacked?
It's possible.
Could be the Russians.
Maybe we'll learn in the next few days.
But we have no internet.
No, but we do.
We have a backup.
Yeah,
but it's not as fast.
We're using backup internet, and it seems to be working, so I'm glad people could join us today. If you want to call into the show live, the number is 970-530-0556. Laura is waiting to answer your phone call, and she can pipe you into the studio here, put you on live. Looks like everything is working, so even through our smaller CenturyLink internet pipe. But, we've got a few email questions. Looks like Laura wants to call Brandon, too. Do we want Brandon to come on the show?
Oh, goodness darn it. I forgot about that. Yeah, we have an email question for Brandon. What'd you do with it?
What did I do with it?
Oh, darn it.
We have a lot of other emails to get to, though. Was
yeah,
it a press
but Brandon's
email?
Been waiting to come on, and I wanted to get this question answered. I'll find okay. It. You know, I emailed it to Brandon, so Brandon has the question. He better have it, because I got to find a better filing strategy. I got to get all these emails into that
elephant
thing.
I think we need to plan
thing.
On Brandon for next week, because we can't, really,
get him
we
on
can't
the
really work this out while the live broadcast is going.
No, we can work it out. We got a question. I know I have it. I just read it. I'll find it.
So would you like me to instruct Laura to call Brandon?
Sure. We'll get Brandon on the phone.
Okay. Although if there's other callers that want to give us a ring, that would be
And Brandon,
awesome.
For those who don't know, we have two listeners right now, is our estate planning attorney since Pete is on permanent retired vacation.
So we'll see if we can get Brandon on the line. Last week or the week, actually, was it last? Yeah, it was last week. Last week we tried him, and he got a little busy with some clients, so we answered some other questions. So, which is what we're going to do until we get him on the line. So we will proceed with several email questions that we have. I'm of unknown topics because Jim didn't share with me those topics, which makes the show more exciting for me. But
I found the question.
Okay, keep it to the side. until Brandon gets on the phone.
How are we going to tell Laura to call?
I got it handled. You just move on with another question.
Okay.
Topic?
Well, we've got a few. I want to encourage listeners, our iTunians. We did get an email question from a Texan who asked a question about Irma.
Well, we might have a caller, so.
Okay, well, that's
probably
Brandon.
Why don't you start with that, and we'll see who it is.
But I want to encourage the Texas listener and all our iTunians. At the end of today's live recording, we are going to play a rebroadcast of our Colorado show. The Colorado show is recorded. We actually record it just before recording this show, and it plays Saturday mornings in Colorado. But we had Peter Trozen of Trozen Insurance talk about Medicare, and this question on Irma, income-related Medicare adjustment amount, that question on Medicare was answered on that show. So I want our Texas iTunian, keep listening to this show. We'll fast forward through it if you're on iTunes. And get to the Colorado show. And on the second part of the Colorado show, first part of the Colorado show, we answered your question on Irma. So I just wanted to let that iTunian know her question was answered.
So apparently Peter Scott is on the phone.
Oh, good. That's a different question. Oh, I didn't tell him he was going on the show live. Maybe I should have. Hi, Pete.
He didn't tell
me
either. So you might be nice if you share some of this with me.
Well, I texted Pete. Yeah. I said, hey, can you call the show? And apparently he texted back calling now, but you made me put my phone on mute, so I never knew.
Would you like to speak with him?
Sure, bring him on the phone.
Okay, so I will ask her to forward him over, and we'll have Peter Scott on. We'll have
he can answer both questions, Brandon's and his.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if this works. I'm on Do Not Disturb, so that didn't work.
So she has to send
him
back
in? So keep talking about the question.
Okay. Oh, there's Justin. No, he was on DND, so you have to send him again. Okay. I'll text Pete. Can you call back?
No.
I think he got hung up on.
Oh.
Yeah, he gets if you're on Do Not.
Well, this is working well today. Little conversation ahead of time would make this work a lot smoother.
Okay, I told Pete to call back. He'll call back. Let me get to his question. Okay. So this person wrote, "Love your show. I have learned a lot. My wife and I are in the midst of estate planning. Our lawyer is recommending against a revocable living trust because he feels real estate put into the revocable living trust will lose its step up in cost basis at our death. I don't believe he's correct about this, but I can't find any independent clear confirmation or contradiction to this point." And this was the question that I was going to have Pete answer. "It seems it might have to do with whether it is between spouses who have two separate revoking living trusts or whether the real estate is coming into or out of a real estate investment trust as a bequest or gift between spouses. This
Perfect.
Is all so, very confusing."
So, good afternoon, Peter Scott. Are you on the phone with us?
I certainly am. This is all very confusing.
It is all very confusing.
It's confusing to us, too. Did they tell you you're actually on the Retirement and IRA show being recorded right now?
No, they didn't share that with me, but I kind of figured I might be. So I'm very careful about what I'm saying.
Perfect.
Not only is it being recorded, it's actually live broadcast on the internet.
And how many listeners are listening?
One now because...
we lost one.
Yeah.
But we have many, many iTunian fans, Pete. But before we get to the email question, which I just read and I don't think you actually heard, how the hell is retirement treating you?
Well, it's quite busy, and I'm not officially out of the office yet. I'm still trying to clean things up. So it's an ongoing struggle.
When are you going to be officially retired?
Well, they asked me that date last week, and I picked a date of April 16th just as a goal. So hopefully
of
we'll
next year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you're going to be hanging around through tax time.
Well, yeah, my wife will be working, so I might as well do something productive.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Well, we'd love to bring you in the office again and record some shows with us, because it's been a while. But
it's kind of fun having him on the phone.
It is. It works right on the phone.
Plus, he can be on the golf course when he's calling.
Exactly. Well, are you on the golf course?
No, I'm sitting in my office in Fort Collins.
Oh, so you're working. Okay.
Yes, I am.
But for those who don't know, this Peter is Peter Scott, a estate planning attorney extraordinaire, and a very knowledgeable person who I think can answer this question quite easily. Let me repeat it for you, Pete. You ready?
Okay, you're really putting me on the spot. You know?
I think you can handle this one, Peter.
Yeah, I think you're all set here. All right. My wife and I are in the midst of estate planning. Our lawyer is recommending against a revocable living trust because he believes real estate put into a revocable living trust will lose its step-up in cost basis. I am not sure he's correct about this, but I can't find any independent, clear confirmation or contradiction of this point. It seems it might have to do with whether or not it's between two spouses who have separate revocable living trusts, or whether the real estate is coming into or out of a revocable living trust as a bequest or gift between spouses. This is all very confusing with lots of moving parts. If you have any information that can help me, it would be greatly appreciated. And it is from someone we'll call George from Connecticut.
Okay. Well, he's getting some wrong advice. Section 121 of the Internal Revenue Code allows a personal residence to be placed into a revocable living trust. And basically, the distinction is revocable living trusts are what are, at least in the business, are called grantor trusts, which means that they are totally ignored for income tax purposes, which means the IRS doesn't recognize them. They use the trust makers, the person that created the trust, their tax identification number, otherwise known as their Social Security number, to report all income, including sales of a personal residence. So the placement of real estate, we're talking personal residence here, into a revocable living trust allows them to take the exemption of $500,000 for a married couple under Section 121.
Okay, now how about the step up in basis? If the attorney is saying it's going to, I've never heard an asset inside a revocable living trust is not eligible for a step up in basis. The attorney is recommending period against a revocable living trust, saying real estate put into a revocable living trust will lose step up in cost basis at death. I've never heard of that. Is that true, though?
Well, there's a good reason you haven't heard of it, because it's wrong.
Right.
Okay. That's what I thought, but
The litmus test for that is if an asset is included in their taxable estate, that is, they own and have the right to deal with the property, to sell it, to mortgage it, then even if it's owned by an irrevocable trust, if they retain that right, it's included in their estate, their taxable estate, and if it's in their taxable estate, it gets a step up in basis.
Even in a irrevocable trust, as long as they still have that control, it still would get
the
step up.
As long as it's got the control, which triggers that being included in their estate, that's what gets the step up. Yep.
So the classic case on that is the parents give their house to their kids but remain in the house. So they've changed the title. They've gifted the entire house to the kids. But the parents continue to live in the trust and then die. The fact that they've retained the right to live in the trust is enough to cause it to be included in their estate, and therefore the step-up in basis occurs.
Even though they transferred the title to the kids before death.
Exactly. Yeah.
But because they still retained the right to live in the house, it is included in there, the parents' estate, and will get the step-up in basis.
So I'm actually surprised that this person...
It might be time to get a new lawyer.
Yeah, it's a little harsh, but I'm surprised that they are a practicing attorney, because this is a fairly basic and straightforward issue.
It is, unfortunately. Or maybe they... I'll come to at least some defense. Maybe the attorney wasn't clear in what they were saying, but it doesn't sound like it.
Yep.
Okay, so I think the other thing he might be asking, and I don't want to run too far down a rabbit hole, but he's asking about an ILIT, excuse me, not an ILIT, but a revocable living trust, either in each name or both their names. If there is a revocable living trust in both their names and they put their jointly held, well, it was a jointly held home, but now the home is titled to the trust or deeded to the trust, so the trust owns it, and one spouse dies, the step-up and basis rules would be identical as if there was no trust there as well, Pete, right?
That is correct. So in a separate property state, such as Colorado and Connecticut, there would be a step-up and basis in one half of the property, and the other half that would be attributed to the survivor would have the original basis. If they're in one of the nine community property states, then there is a step-up and basis in the entire asset that's held in the trust.
And it doesn't matter that it's in the revocable living trust. Okay, perfect.
That's
and
right.
That's what I thought the answer was, but I wanted you to do it. And this question kind of ties into the second question I'll have you answer real quickly.
Whoa.
Well, the other question. Yeah,
do I get overtime pay for a second question?
Yeah, sure.
Will. I'm going to sneak this one in because of what you said. You threw this attorney under the bus, and you said that it's time to get a new attorney. So we got this question in, also from a George, and he writes, I feel like I have a marginally satisfactory handle on our accumulation planning. However, I'm struggling with estate planning. How do I find a good, competent, and trustworthy, not necessarily cheap, estate planning attorney in my area? I live in the Commonwealth of Virginia, which I know is a goodly distance from your digs in Colorado. I'm hoping you can point me at a resource to help me find a good attorney. Unless you could refer one directly to me, located in the Democratic People's Republic of Northern Virginia. I know resources that can help me find a financial planner, but I have no idea where to start finding an attorney. Many thanks in advance for any insight you can provide. Cheers. And he signed it, George.
Okay. Well, there are two organizations that I belong to. They're national in scope, and these are people that are well-trained by these organizations and also practice extensively, if not exclusively, in estate planning. And they are probably as competent as any other estate planning attorney, or maybe more so, at least in my opinion. So the two websites are www, of course, NNEPA, stands for National Network of Estate Planning Attorneys.com, www.nnepa.com. And they have a feature on there that you can search for one of their member attorneys. The second website is www.wealthcouncil.com. That's WEALTHCOUNSEL.com. And they have an attorney search feature on that one as well. And you can go to those sites, search for the attorney in your area, and then there's usually a link to their website so that you can get their background, education, experience, that sort of thing, and evaluate.
Now, the Wealth Council, is that just estate planning attorneys like the other group?
Yes, they're both estate planning attorneys.
Okay, so two groups of estate planning attorneys.
Yep.
So anyone throughout the country can use those, obviously.
Yes.
Excellent.
Now, keep in mind that at least in Iowa, attorneys in Iowa are not allowed to participate in these websites. So while they may have members, Iowa is a little different, and perhaps some of us would view it a little behind the times, but they don't allow them to list on those on any website, as far as I know.
So you have to go down to the local coffee shop and look on the bulletin board what business cards have been posted in Iowa.
Yeah, exactly.
So they do things a little bass-ackwards in Iowa. That's okay. Our first live caller to the Retirement and IRA Show Internet version, Q&A, a couple weeks ago, was an Iowawian. So it is, Iowa has Internet.
Thankful they weren't looking for an estate planning attorney because
True.
We couldn't have helped them.
Exactly. So it makes it a little more challenging.
And any other states behind the eight ball besides Iowa?
Not that I'm aware of. That's the one that seems to keep popping up, so I'm not aware of others.
maybe the lawmakers in Iowa will realize the internet is here to stay and will change the law so the regulators will allow that.
Well, we can only hope so.
Well, Pete, I do greatly appreciate this.
Yeah,
this
talk
been...
about you texted him and boom, he's right on the phone right answering he's, questions. He's,
well,
he's two for two.
When Jim calls, I answer. You,
you do. Yeah. That's like the old E.F. Hutton commercials.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. That's what I had in mind.
But, Pete, it was great catching up. Let's do lunch again, seriously, because I want to catch up with you, see how you're doing.
All right. Well, shoot me an email or something. We'll do that.
I'll have my people
Chris,
contact
you.
Yeah. I'll have my people contact your people.
Okay. Your service contacts my service.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Bye, Pete.
Take care, you guys. All right, bye.
Well, that was perfect.
That it showed the glorious benefits of the live version of the Retirement and IRA Show.
From the muff-ups to
had a few
the actual
glitches,
answers.
Technically, and you know, didn't wasn't as smooth, maybe. But talk about great content.
We're learning.
He delivered.
He did. Pete,
for sure.
Pete hit the ball out of the park. Yep. We're learning how to do all this techie live stuff. Did we lose our one listener?
We've had a few people come and go. So I think, if the statistics are correct, we currently have two listeners.
Two.
For a while, we had one.
So we have a 100% increase.
So I guess you could measure it like that, yeah. And if you're listening and you'd like to call in, the last caller was someone supplying information, but if you have a question, please give us a call. We can take your call immediately, live, right on the show, right now, as we speak. That's assuming you're listening when it is, what time is it here? It's 3:55 p.m. Mountain Time on November 6th. So if it's that time, you can call live, 970-530-0556. If you're listening at another time, you're listening to this thing pre-recorded, and sorry, we're not available for the call right now. Although you can still call the same number if you have questions.
You can call the same number next Tuesday.
Well, they can call any time of the week.
No, we don't take calls during the week.
You don't take calls during the week.
I'm working during the week. They can send us an email.
No, if they want to call the office, they're not allowed to call.
But if they think I'm going to drop everything and
their
question.
If they need to call and hire us to do something.
Oh, no, absolutely. No, they can do that. I thought you meant just call us whenever you want and we'll answer your question.
I didn't realize we were restricting people's access to us.
No. I thought you were like telling people, just call us, we'll answer your question. I was like, no, dude, I got a job.
No, I get it. I thought we wanted people to maybe call and form a relationship with you.
So what you are trying to explain to our iTunians is that we work with people throughout the country. So all jokes aside, if you're looking for financial planners and you're looking for someone who specializes in retirement planning, what Chris was trying to say, and I totally misunderstood, is yes, you can definitely contact us at the office. You can go to our website, Jim Helps. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Click on the Contact Us button or click on the little calendar on the homepage and actually schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion, which for our iTunians, unless you live in Colorado, it will be a phone call. And actually this morning I spoke with...
Or a short airplane flight.
Well, this morning I spoke to someone from Anchorage. I was not going to
fly. That'd be a long
flight. Yeah, when he answered, I called him at 7 o'clock his time, 9 o'clock my time, mm-hmm. and I asked, how's the weather up there, sunny and warm?
And he
found a little humor in that one. Yes, no matter where throughout the country you are, we're available to counsel with you. So you can schedule a coffee and a second opinion phone call. We'll chat with you a little, explain how working with us in case you are interested in that can be done. But our practice is unique. We don't necessarily manage assets. You don't have to send your money over to us and have us take 1, 1.25, 1.5, or other ungodly amount that people take from your retirement accounts. And instead, you just hire us for our advice. Our specialty is retirement planning. We have a very disciplined process you and I created, Chris. A funny name. We won't get to it. Not the name isn't funny, but naming it was a funny story. The Secure Retirement Income Process. We haven't talked in a while about how we came up with that name. And
Doesn't make a very good acronym.
SRIP?
SRIP. Yeah. We didn't think that
We didn't think that far ahead. Yeah. But the original name was not going over too well with compliance. And that was my first experience trying to name our process where I realized compliance folk don't have sense of humor.
Yes, no sense of humor.
He had none whatsoever when we were trying to come up with names. But we'll share that story. We hadn't talked about it in a couple of years, but it is a funny story. You're the one who came up with Secure Retirement Income.
I did?
That was you.
I should have been asking for royalties.
You should have been asking for royalties on that one for sure. And we both thought, since they didn't like my choices, they weren't going to like this choice either.
No, but somehow
it flew.
This word worked, right?
I don't get it. But we'll share that story again in the future. We do have two more emails we want to get to. And if there's any live listeners and you want to ask a live question, you can call up and do that just like Pete did. It works pretty smoothly. But we have two more questions. I know I definitely want to get to one because it's pretty important. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that the other one isn't equally as important, but the other one just came in last week. So if I have to wait a little while longer on that one, I will.
So did Peter answer the Brandon question?
Correct.
So we don't need Brandon.
We don't
anymore.
Need. Is Brandon on the phone?
No,
too?
He's not. Okay. But I don't want her to keep trying to call him.
Nope. Day late and a dollar short on Brandon. Yep. We got Pete.
It's all
instead.
Good.
Brandon is Pete's mentee. Pete is his mentor.
Right.
So can we have two people on the phone at the same time?
Possible. We'll have to test that one.
Okay, because that would be helpful if Pete says, "Hey, you know, if anyone ever calls with an estate planning question, just call me." Be a lot easier than hanging up, calling Pete, hanging up, calling the other person back.
We'd have to test a few things first. I think it would work.
Cool.
I think we could make that work.
So we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Okay, so let's get into this question. It begins, "Hi, Chris and Chris."
I'm first listed?
You are first.
Nice. Nice.
So how much did you pay this person whose email I'm not going to read now?
Just yesterday or maybe this morning where they were reaching out to set up an appointment with moi.
Moi as uh-huh. in you?
Yes.
I'll be damned.
I haven't told you about that yet, but yeah.
Where do I stand
apparently
in
I'm
all this?
Apparently I'm making quite an impact on
you
the show,
are.
Even though you hog up 90% of the time on the show.
Hi, Chris and Jim. Mm-hmm. Well, moving on to the next email question. All right, so I'll give it to you.
Maybe
on that.
They just went alphabetical order. Maybe it's not a diss.
It could be.
Yeah.
Maybe they did it by weight.
Maybe.
Or lack of hair.
Or maturity.
I think weight or lack of hair is how they listed it, not maturity.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I have been listening to your show for some time and would like to thank you for the work you do. I listened to the recent show on required minimum distributions. We did that a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And would like to ask for details concerning required minimum distributions and special needs trusts.
Mm.
I have struggled to understand whether the same rules apply. I would think that a special needs trust would not be considered a designated beneficiary. Contrarily, I have heard you or other podcasters speak of conduit versus accumulation trusts in determining the five-year versus stretch distribution rules.
Sure, we don't need Peter on this one?
No, I get this covered.
Okay, good.
I would like to understand why our estate planning attorney... Here's another one. Maybe we should have kept Pete on for this mm-hmm. one. I would like to understand why our estate planning attorney has directed us to eventually place IRA money in this special needs trust and not life insurance. All right, I'll stop right there. It's time for a new attorney if you got that advice, and I'll explain why. And listen to the previous answer Pete gave on how to find someone. They're from North Carolina. Do we have them? Yep, we got that.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
At the end, I'll remind people how to find a new estate planning attorney, because this is definitely one where you need to look around.
Yes. Of course, things get very complicated and depend on the age of our deaths, the amount in our IRAs, qualifications for public funding, and taxation of trust income. Currently, our IRAs are hearty amounts. I mean, that's a word you don't hear often. Mm-hmm. You hear it for soup.
There was a word in the previous email from before that I goodly.
Goodly.
It's a goodly distance. Yes. Well, that's not a phrase you hear a lot, at least in Colorado.
And hearty. You mm-hmm. hear hearty in terms of mm-hmm. like chunky soup.
But, I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Campbell's chunky soup.
Campbell's, yep.
It's hearty.
Currently, the IR, maybe it's a southern thing.
I don't know.
Because the other guy was Virginia. That's southern.
Mm.
So Virginia was a Confederate state. That's southern.
It's on the border. We'll see.
Yeah, whatever. Currently, the IRAs are hearty amounts, mm-hmm. and the beneficiary designations pass this way. Owner, spouse, special needs trust.
Mm-hmm.
It concerns me not having a thorough understanding of this. Thanks for any information. And, of course, they use their real name. We're going to call them George in North Carolina.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
Okay, I will say, George, I just came back from the Ed Slott program. We were in Kansas City, Missouri. Was that last week or the week before? God, I can't remember.
A couple weeks ago.
I think it was 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And this was one of the topics. This is Erie. Mm-hmm. And
not Pennsylvania.
No, not Pennsylvania. This is Erie as in, wow, I just talked about this. And Ed drilled into us, never, ever fund a special needs trust with proceeds from an IRA. Period. Now, if that's all you have and you don't qualify for life insurance and you can't put any other assets in the special needs trust, I would still say not to do it. I'd say close the IRA and do something else. Let's walk through this. She was a little concerned. First, can a special needs trust be a designated beneficiary? Remember we spoke, listeners, if you listen all the time, you heard the RMD show, hopefully, and I talked what can be beneficiary of an IRA. And I told you, Chris, anyone or anything can be a beneficiary, but what does a designated beneficiary have to be?
A human, live
with a pulse.
Human.
Not a dead human.
Right.
A human with a pulse. Only a human with a pulse can be a designated beneficiary. If you don't have a designated beneficiary, you have a beneficiary. And if you have just a beneficiary, the rules are quite complicated. We'll go through them again on another show. It's not really what she wants to get into today. However, she wrote in here, I would think a special needs trust would not be considered a designated beneficiary.
She's correct.
She's correct. Kinda, but
right.
If you do it right, the IRS will consider a special needs trust and any other trust for that matter a designated beneficiary, but it has to be done right. In short, listener, and this is nothing that you need to know, although you might want to make sure your estate planning attorney knows it after some of the advice you've been given. But in short, in order for a trust to Peter,
George.
Chris, no, don't,
oh, you're talking
don't
to me?
Say a different name. I was looking at you. You are Chris.
Yes.
I called you Peter by mistake.
It's okay.
Well, we had
Could
Peter on the phone.
I get it.
Okay. So, where was I?
In order for the special needs trust to qualify,
you need four elements of any trust. If a trust has these four elements and then is worded properly, which don't underestimate the wording is hugely important. But in order to be a designated beneficiary or qualify as a designated beneficiary, trust has to have four things. First, has to be legal under state law. Now, that's not a hard one.
No.
Not too many attorneys are writing trusts that are illegal. Under state,
state law. Right.
Okay. Has to be legal under state law. Second, it has to be irrevocable or irrevocable. Depends if you say tomato or tomato. It has to be irrevocable at death.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, all beneficiaries have to be immediately identifiable. That's an IRS term. It cannot be, as Ed has drilled into our heads all the time, my favorite son.
Or my children.
Whoever they may be.
Right. Trying to anticipate future births.
Correct.
Right.
As Ed Slott says, name names. The beneficiary of the trust, name names. And number four, the trust document. Must be delivered, and number four is what blows up most trusts.
Mm-hmm.
The trust document must be delivered to the IRA custodian by October 30th of the year for September, October 30th. It's Valentine's. What's the holiday there? The candy one. October 31st.
That's Halloween.
The candy one.
Right. There's Valentine's Day, too, which you love. But
so October 31st, excuse me.
Of the year following.
Of the year following the IRA owner's death. That's where the IRS disqualifies most trusts. Because let me tell you, if the custodian doesn't get it, they'll report it to the IRS.
So none of these reasons specifically are why we say don't name the special needs trust as beneficiary IRA. These aren't really the issue.
This is to be a designated beneficiary.
Right. These are speed bumps in the road. These are very strict qualification criteria for it not to cause you a big problem. But this isn't why we say don't ever name a special needs trust as beneficiary of your IRA. That's yet to come.
But her first thing was, she wrote, I would think a special needs trust would not be considered a designated beneficiary. You are correct, as Chris pointed out. However, if your trust has those four elements, or actually it's three elements and one task, if it is irrevocable after death, all beneficiaries are named, and it's legal under state law, that's all done that's just kind of how you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And then after the death of the IRA owner, a copy of the trust is delivered to the custodian before October 31st of the year following the IRA owner's death. It's a designated beneficiary. But now, what is that going to mean with a special needs trust? Special needs trusts, listeners, are used to leave money to children or adults who have issues, could be physical issues, could be mental issues, could be behavioral issues, that make them incapable of taking care of themselves properly or managing their finances. So yes, it could be someone in a wheelchair. It could be someone who has a drug problem. It could be someone with Down syndrome. But for one reason or another, they have issues that dictate or predicate money should not be left directly to them. In most special needs situations as well, Chris, these individuals, these ill individuals, also are receiving governmental assistance. And governmental assistance is based on income. Now, a lot of these people, especially people if they have Down syndromes or autism or something else, they're incapable of working often, Chris. So they don't have much income. And if you don't have a lot of income, because governmental benefits are income driven, if you don't have a lot of income, the government will step in and provide benefits. Mm-hmm. Okay. So a special needs trust is created to allow parents, loved ones, other family members, and friends to leave assets to a trust, to leave assets that will help this special needs person and not eliminate their ability to qualify for governmental assistance.
So the last thing you want to leave them is income, which is exactly what you're leaving them
with an
IRA.
So let's look at that. Listeners, when you look at your IRA, most people, Chris, see assets.
Right. They have X amount saved up in our IRA.
And they look inside their IRA and they see they have a mutual fund or an ETF or a stock or a bond or a piece of real estate or whatever, anything but life insurance or collectibles. That will not be inside an IRA. If they are, you don't have an IRA anymore. That's a whole other story. But you look, people, at your IRA and you see assets. You see investments. You see stocks reaching an all-time high and your IRA growing. You see assets. The IRS sees
income.
Income, exactly.
Waiting to be taxed.
Exactly. I've often said on this show with a smile, your IRA to the IRS is IRD. And a lot of people don't know what that means, but if you listen to the show, you know your individual retirement account to the Internal Revenue Service is income with respect to a decedent. Notice what they call the money in an IRA. I-R-D. Income in respect to a decedent. Not income in respect to a dummy or income in respect to a guy named Doug. It's income in respect to a decedent. They know you're going to die someday, and they know this is income. And when you die, it doesn't escape income taxes because it's called income in respect to a decedent. They're very patient, the government. They'll be here forever, so they can outlive you, and they're just waiting for you to die. So where you see an asset, listeners, the IRS sees income. Now, every time I hear this, I cringe sometimes. It says, oh, I'm going to put my IRA in a trust. No, you're not. You don't put it in a trust, as if a trust is like this little Ziploc baggie, and you're going to open it and put your little IRA in it and zip it closed. Oh, no. My IRA is in a trust. What happens is your trust, your special needs trust, becomes beneficiary of your IRA. What does a beneficiary receive?
Receives income payouts from the IRA.
Exactly. So the beneficiary simply receives the money from the IRA. And Chris correctly said that money is income.
Yep.
You see an asset, IRS sees income. So now you're creating a trust, Chris, a special needs trust, that has really advanced planning language. Let me tell you, listener and all iTunians out there, you don't go to any Joe Blow attorney for special needs trust. Even Peter Scott, who I think is one of the most brilliant estate and tax planning attorneys I know, refers out his special needs trusts. He doesn't do that.
Very specialized work.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He knows two good attorneys in Northern Colorado. We had Jan Lord on before on mm-hmm. the show. And there's another gentleman in Loveland. His name escapes me. And most attorneys refer to them. That's who they use. Mm-hmm. And they know the language and the wording and how to do a special needs trust. So you're going to go to all this effort to create a trust with the language in it that effectively will send out income. It doesn't change the taxation of that money, Chris. It's still income. But it's paid in such a way and to cover only certain expenses. That's how the special needs trust gets away with it. If you read them, it can't be used for a lot of expenses that government benefits apply to. It can only be used to government expenses that government doesn't pay for. So by having it worded correctly and making sure the money is distributed correctly, so I always say if you name a special needs trust as beneficiary or you create one and for a child rather, and you name a child as beneficiary of a special needs trust, the trustee, make it more than your great uncle who's never done mm-hmm. this. The person, the trustee, has to know these rules. I often recommend a professional trustee for the trustee as a special needs trust. Every other trust, don't worry about it. You can name your great uncle if you'd like. But you really need a trustee who knows what they're doing. So they make sure the money goes to the appropriate expenses. And if it's done correctly, you can leave millions of dollars to help take care of these children and adults who need very specialized care and expensive care without ruining any chance to get government benefits. But let's back up to the issue going on here. Her attorney is encouraging her to not leave life insurance, but instead name the trust as beneficiary of the IRA instead of naming the trust as beneficiary of a life insurance policy. Chris, does the federal government tax life insurance?
No.
At all. Any tax. Capital gains tax, income tax, sales tax, use tax, property tax.
The only thing that can happen is the person who owns the policy, the life insurance will be included in their estate. So if they happen to have a large enough estate where that would be taxed as part of estate taxes, there's that small issue. But every other kind of tax, income tax, capital gains tax,
normally estate taxes aren't going to apply to very many people, only the very top crust of people.
And you can create an island.
And you can create ways to get around that. But that's the only scenario where I could perceive there being a tax applied. So when this life insurance pays out and funds this special needs trust, it goes in there, fills it up, hopefully to the brim, right? Fills it up with a massive amount to take care of this special needs child, tax-free.
Tax-free.
And with no requirements that any amount be paid out at a certain time or any of that. It's just tax-free sitting in there. The trustee can now distribute it totally with just the best fiduciary issues in consideration of the special needs child.
Exactly. And if it's a trustee who knows what they're doing, they can distribute the money correctly and government benefits continue. And you can leave $500,000, $1 million, $2 million. It doesn't matter, to the special needs trust, 100% tax free. Now, you leave $1 million, $2 million. Remember, she has a Hardy IRA. You leave $1 million or $2 million dollars to a special needs trust. You name the special needs trust as beneficiary of an IRA. Now you're going to run into some issues. If the special needs trust qualifies as a designated beneficiary, mm-hmm. it's irrevocable at death. It's legal under state law. It was delivered to the IRA custodian by October 31st of the year following the IRA owner's death, and all beneficiaries are immediately identifiable. It has those four elements satisfied. It is a designated beneficiary.
Which grants it the ability to
stretch out the payments.
Stretch it out.
On the life expectancy of the special needs child. Mm-hmm. Here's another thing, people. Don't name any other beneficiaries of that trust. You shouldn't do it that way. You really shouldn't. Special needs trust should just be for the child. Create another trust for everyone else, because these trusts, a special needs trust, is what we call a discretionary, or she used the term, and I use it sometimes as well, an accumulation trust. Let's back up to what most trusts as beneficiaries of an IRA do. They simply act as a conduit, Chris. They simply take the RMD, as it's a one-way valve. It takes the RMD out, required minimum distribution, takes it out of the IRA, passes it straight through to the beneficiary right away. Boom. Don't pass go. Don't collect $200.
And we do that so that the trust itself isn't taxed on the distribution, because trust tax rates are horrific.
Which is what we're
getting compared to an individual. So it's set up as a conduit trust so that it ends up in the individual, so then it's exposed to the tax rates of that individual instead.
And I don't want to get much into conduit trust. We'll do that. And Pete would be great to bring on the show. We'll bring him on again. He and I, when we go out a lot, we talk trusts. It's
woo-hoo.
We don't talk about women. We talk about his wife, and he can't talk about my woman because I don't have one. And then we just talk about IRA beneficiary trusts.
Talk about a hypothetical wife and how a trust might affect her.
Exactly. If I had a woman, this is what I'd be doing. But he and I are geeks when it comes to this. We just love talking about it. But in a typical conduit trust situation, people, as Chris said, the money just passes through, hence the name conduit. Mm-hmm. And it's a one-way valve, though, on the end of the... People might be saying, why the hell do this? Well, as soon as the RMD goes out, it slams shut, and no one else can go back up into the IRA, so it is protected from creditors and predators and bankruptcy and all those types of things. You can't get in it. So it's protecting the IRA. That's why you would do it. Conduit trusts are wicked easy, and you can have multiple beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Name multiple beneficiaries of a conduit trust. The required minimum distributions will be based on the life expectancy of the oldest beneficiary, and it doesn't matter. You can name charities as contingents, and it's just very easy. But an accumulation trust or discretionary trust, either one is a good euphemism. Accumulation, you can see money accumulates in it, Chris. It doesn't pass through. That one-way valve is locked, and that money is coming out and building up. Or I call it a discretionary trust. The valve opens, but only when the trustee wants it to open, mm-hmm. not when the beneficiary wants it to open. When you have these accumulation trusts, the required minimum distribution may or may not pass out. If it stays inside the trust, it will be taxed to the trust. If it is removed from the trust, it gets taxed by the recipient. Now, if Peter was here, he would say it's actually the trust pays the taxes and then gets an equal deduction for the distribution because the distribution taxes are paid by the recipient. That's getting deep down into the minutiae of the tax code. I just like to tell people it's taxed where it ends up. Mm-hmm. If it ends up in the trust pays it.
So with the special needs situation, you have two bad outcomes. Either it's kept inside the special needs trust, maintaining the child's ability to collect the government benefits, but then it's exposed to these outrageously high tax rates. It's not that the rates are necessarily high, but you achieve the highest rates very quickly at about $14,000, $15,000.
$12,000. So let's get to that. $12,000. You've got a calculator. Mm-hmm. Let's just say she passes away with $2 million in the IRA. Mm-hmm. And let's say the special needs child at the time is in his 50s, so he has a 23.6-year remaining life expectancy. So you take $2 million and you divide it by 23.6 equals...
$84,746.
Okay. So in year one, which is December 31st of the year following the Ariana's death,
Call it $85,000.
$85,000 is coming out of that $2 million IRA, and it goes into the special needs trust. Now, if that special needs trust, Chris, was a conduit and it passed $85,000 onto the recipient, you can kiss goodbye any government benefits.
Right. You'd be taxed at the rates of an individual that had $85,000 worth of income. So
but
certain of it
lose.
At zero and you know all that kind of stuff.
You'd
but
lose
you lose all
benefits.
The government benefits. So,
absolutely.
So there's the first bad possibility is shutting off the government benefits. So instead the trust, say, keeps it inside the trust so it doesn't go out maintaining the benefits.
And
what
that's where
there?
The term accumulation or discretionary mm-hmm. trust builds in.
Yep.
So now the trustee can't send this money out to the special needs child. He or she has to dole it out correctly. It may turn out that all 85 gets doled out, but it has to be doled out correctly and assigned to only certain expenses. It just can't be thrown at the person. So it could very well turn out that not everything is sent out, or maybe only $20,000 is sent out.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have $65,000 yep. remaining in the trust. Accumulation trusts or discretionary trusts, which a special needs trust by default is, will be taxed at the highest marginal rate, which right now is 39.6 plus any state and local income taxes, but at the federal level, 39.6%. After receiving $12,500. So this trust just received $65,000. It actually received $85,000, but it passed $20,000 on.
So about $52,000 of that income will be taxed at the highest marginal rate.
What's 40% of $52,000?
Only $21,000, roughly.
Not counting any state or local income taxes.
Right.
So there's the problem this woman is going to have. And these RMD amounts get larger and larger and larger. So she's going to be losing 40% of the money intended to take care of her special needs child, probably more than 40. I don't know what the income tax rate in North Carolina is and if there's any local income tax as well, but I would say probably close to 45% of her money that is to go to take care of her child is going to be lost to taxes because she's creating a special needs trust, which is a good thing to do, but she's leaving an IRA to it, which is a bad thing to do because the IRS doesn't see assets, they see income. So the number one way and the number one reason I ever recommend life insurance. So the number one way to fund a special needs child and the number one reason I recommend permanent life insurance is to fund special needs trusts. If during her lifetime she starts taking money out of the IRA and using it to pay the premiums on a life insurance policy, and she leaves the life insurance policy to the special needs trust. She can leave $1 million or $2 million or $3 million. Remember, folks, she leaves $1 million to the special needs trust in life insurance. That could be the equivalent of leaving 1.7 or 1.8 million in an IRA mm-hmm. because of all the taxes she's going to pay. So what she should be doing is taking her hearty IRA, as she words it, and using a portion of it to start funding a permanent life insurance policy. And I personally, listener, you don't need, you're not looking to grow cash value. Stay away from these expensive variable universal lives or, God forsake, index universal life policies. You don't need any of that. You don't need to build cash value. Is just excess premium mm-hmm. going into the account. Why not take the excess premium and just buy more damn life insurance with it? I favor guaranteed universal life policies to fund special needs trust, GULs. Now, that said, Chris, there is a time where I override that. Most GULs do not build any cash value. And therefore, if your special needs child predeceases you and you no longer need the insurance, you could be stuck, have been paying for something you no longer need. Now, that said, you could get guaranteed universal life policies. AIG has one that will allow you to receive 100% of your premium back in year 15 and year 25. So that provides a little bit of protection. Guaranteed universal life policies for special needs trusts, because they don't build cash value, the premiums are low, low, low. Or relatively speaking, they're low, low, low. So you can buy more bang for your buck, buy more life insurance. But talk to someone who understands life insurance. We'll be more than happy to talk with you if you have any questions on it, because we do these types of trusts and fund them with life insurance. But back to your original long question. Well, not long. The answer was long, but the question was short. You don't understand why the attorney is telling you to fund the special needs trust with the IRA and not life insurance. I think the attorney is telling it to you because they don't understand taxation. They don't understand the rules. You really need, the attorney might have put together a really good special needs trust for you, but you really got to talk to someone who knows how to fund these. If you have hardy non-IRA assets that you might be leaving to normal children or family members, those without special needs, switch it around. Put the house, put the car, put the collectibles, put the gold and the silver, put all that in the special needs trust. That will be inherited by the special needs trust with a 100% step up in basis. The trust can sell it 100% tax free, and you've got tax free money in there. But if you don't have all those assets, if you just have the IRA, really look at life insurance. And then finally, Chris, if you can't qualify for life insurance and you don't have any non-IRA assets, start converting. I know this is a killer because you're still going to have to pay the taxes. It doesn't help you on the taxes. But if you were to start converting into an IRA, into a Roth mm-hmm. IRA, at least all the growth would be 100% tax-free between the date of conversion and the date your special needs child inherits it.
And you have more control over what tax brackets that income is exposed to, because you can control how much conversion you do every year. And hopefully you're in a much better situation than the trust income tax brackets. Most people are. So
yeah, you need to make over $400,000 of income in order to pay 40% in income taxes. So you can convert at the 15 or 25 rate, not as good as 100% tax free that the life insurance would give you, but if you could pay taxes at 15 or 25%, so the trust doesn't have to pay taxes at nearly 40%, that's a win. And then all the growth in the Roth IRA is 100% tax-free, so that's a win. Leave your special needs child assets, not income. And your IRA is income, not an asset. Don't do it the way your attorney is telling you.
Right.
So if you weren't listening earlier when Peter Scott provided us a couple of resources for looking up finding an estate planning attorney that knows what they're doing in your particular area, he gave us two. The first one is NNEPA.com. That's Nancy, Nancy, E, P as in Paul, A.com. So NNEPA.com. And I apologize, I didn't write down what that stood for, but it's some kind of national estate planning attorneys association. Also, he left us wealthcounsel.com. That's wealth counsel spelled counsel.com. Both of those, he said, that have some strong search capabilities on them to find an estate planning attorney in your area that can advise you on these types of things. The music means we're at the end of another episode of the Retirement and IRA Show podcast live edition. So we did have a live caller. In this case, it was Peter Scott. But maybe next week somebody can call in live with an actual question. Although it's kind of fun to call, have Pete call with an answer.
Absolutely. But you can listen to us every Monday afternoon. 2:30 Mountain Time.
3:30 Mountain
3:30
Time.
3:30 Mountain. It used to be 2:30. 3:30 Mountain Time. And call with any questions or continue to email them like this listener did. If you don't want to call or can't call, send them to jim@jimhelps.com or visit our website, jimhelps.com. Schedule that coffee and a second opinion if you'd like to work with us, or click the Contact Us button if you'd like to send us your own email to have answered here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
So today, in addition to what we just listened to with some estate planning issues, we did record our Colorado-based radio show for our podcast listeners because we talked about Medicare issues with Peter Trozen from the Trozen Insurance Agency. We also had Justin Fundalinski on, talked a little bit
and
about...
And another iTunians question.
Right. So we're going to tag that to the end of this recording. So those of you listening to the recorded version of this show can continue listening after the short break and... we'll possibly pick up some interesting tidbits about Medicare. So thanks for joining us this week. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's jimhelps.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
We have two email questions today I want to get to, both on Medicare. The first one, again, is going to be talking a little bit about Irma. It is definitely an iTunian who sent this in because she is from Texas. So, as always, for us, we will call her George.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
Okay, so she begins, is the Maggie calculation determined yearly? Maggie is modified adjusted gross income, and she's talking about Medicare listeners. Is the Maggie calculation yearly to determine the premium using the most current 2 years? I'm going to have to change. She wrote this in a way that's going to be very hard for people to follow. Is the Maggie calculated yearly to determine premiums using the most current 2 year tax status, thus allowing an opportunity for a reduction in the original high Medicare premium costs that are resulting from my participation in Medicare being based on my tax status of married filing separately? What is she saying all there, people, in English? What she's simply wondering, her husband and her are turning 65. Her husband turned 65 this year, she wrote. She's turning 65 next year. They file married separate. Because of that, they've been hit exceedingly high by a Medicare rule called IRMA. That's why we say IRMA is one mean witch. Because when you see what IRMA does, it increases your premiums for certain high-earning individuals. And Justin will go through what those earnings are. And they're quite high. For instance, a single person would need to have a modified adjusted gross income of $85,000 or higher, and a married couple of $170,000 or higher. But if you are married, filing separate, those premium levels kick in at the same amounts. However, they are much more steeper in the amount of penalty that they're going to hit you with, as Justin will explain. So her husband filed for Medicare this year and was hit hard. He has to pay an additional $214 a month in Medicare premiums on top of the $134 a month in Medicare premiums that he's paying. So she was wondering, can they file an amended return? They realized their mistake was filing separate, married filing separate. She wants to know, can we file an amended return in order to wipe out the tax return that is causing this problem? So before Justin explains what IRMA is and what all these different premium levels are and how your Medicare premiums are going to rise, let me just explain real briefly with Maggie, with what she's being hit with, the extra $214 a month. If she was to control her income, if they were filing married at the same income levels they have, you're going to see in a minute, she very well may not have to pay any IRMA whatsoever. But because they're filing married separate, the earnings levels that they use are much lower, and the penalties, I guess you could say, Justin, are much steeper.
And they definitely are much steeper. So where do you want me to start on that one? Because you went over a lot. Do you want to just talk about those brackets,
or
do you want to
talk about the 2 year thing? Because I don't know if a lot of clients know. She kept saying 2 years.
Yes. And there's a little confusion on that part. They do look back at the most.
They being Social Security.
They being, yes.
And
yes.
Medicare.
Right. So they get a filing from the IRS. The IRS provides them the most recent tax return. Okay. So whatever they have on file as your most recent tax return are the figures that they use when they calculate your Maggie, which is how they find their IRMA. We'll define all those later. Okay. So they're focusing completely on the most recent one. The problem there is that it's coming from the IRS and moving over to the Social Security Medicare side. So sometimes they don't have the most recent information. So it could be looking back up to 2 years on that. It's not focusing on, you know, they don't look at the 2 years and average them out or anything like right. that. It is definitely the most recent one that they have received.
Well, the way I like to explain it is this way, folks. You're going to do your it's 2017 now.
Yes.
A couple more months, the end of the year is here. When do you do your 2017 taxes? You're actually going to do them January, February, March of 2018 and file them in April of 2018. When the IRS receives those tax returns, they will send your 2017 tax return to the Social Security office, but it's already 2018. Now Social Security gets your tax return, and they can see what your modified adjusted gross income is, and if your income is high enough to make you impacted by IRMA. If you are, they record that in their software program, but you won't be hit with the higher premiums until the following year because it's already, by the time they do this, July or August
right, they determine
of 2018.
They determine your Medicare premiums all the way back in November, December of the year prior.
Yep.
So for 2018, it's being decided right now, and they
use 2016's numbers.
Essentially 2016's numbers that were filed in 2017 to determine 2018. That's where the two-year thing is coming from. Yeah. But it's not that they take 2 years' worth of data. It's just that they're effectively two tax years behind in their calculation.
And that's what she writes at the beginning, is Maggie calculated yearly, yes, they do calculate it yearly, to determine the premium using the most current two-year tax status.
No, so not the two-year tax
status. She's a little off on that, listener. Also, again, as Chris explained, 2017 is filed in 2018. Social Security gets it in 2018 from the IRS. They look at your earnings. They say, hey, these people earned too much in 2017. We're going to jack their Medicare premiums. Since we're halfway into 2018, we'll just hit them with it for all of 2019.
Right.
So that's how that happens.
Now, on that note, from my reading on it, obviously I've never personally experienced this, but
you're a little too young.
Yes, I'm a little too young. But from my reading on it, you can actually contact your Social Security office and let them know that you've filed a new return and there's something fresh on file with the IRS, and they can go and kind of pull that down and get more recent information and update things for you.
So
you might be able to manually do something, especially in her case. She's talking about amending her return. She can amend her return. That'll be the most recently filed return. And then she can request from the Social Security side, say, hey, that's not my most recent return. Can you get this updated?
And it would be mostly her husband who needs to do this. Remember, and I know both need to do it.
No, it's a little different.
Oh, you told me earlier both needed to file it.
Yeah, so when you amend your return, you're going to create they're filing, married filing separately.
Correct.
Right now, right? So you just amend one return, okay, and you change it into married filing separately. So they're both filing jointly now, so they'd both sign off on that amendment. So once they amend it, then they send it into the IRS, and the IRS will override both of those.
Of the other ones.
So you just amend one, and generally, just a little tax tip on that side, you want to amend the more complicated return that was filed, because then the amendment will be a lot easier.
And listeners, remember what's happening here. Her husband turned 65 first, then she turned 65 next year. They both filed married separate, and now he's being hit with these increased premiums, and she will be hit next year. So they're going to have to file two amended returns. They need to amend the return filed 2 years ago that set her husband's premium, and they have to amend the returns from last year, which is going to set her premiums the following year. So as you and I were talking, she's got to change two, not just one.
Will they really fix the premiums that he has overpaid, in quotes, for 2017 if they file an amended 2015 tax return?
I don't know if they'll look back and say, hey, here's your money back. But I definitely think that they'll look back and say, hey, you've changed your status, so let's update the premium that you're paying from here on out. I really don't know if there's any kind of look back on that.
Yeah. Well, the form, for those who want to know, if you do file an amended return, or if you have a tax return that shows the IRS used the wrong information, either of those two cases, you're going to use a form that is called the Medicare IRMA Life Changing Event Form. They don't even try to put an acronym on that one. No, they put an acronym for everything. Mm-hmm. The Medicare IRMA Life Changing Event Form. No acronym.
IRMA Lice?
IRMA Lice?
Yeah, LCE on the end, life-changing event.
Okay, form.
Life.
But that's the form you're going to file. We're not going to walk you through that because, honestly, we've never filed a form like that before. But your question was, can you file an amended return? You can. But if your husband is being hit by it in 2017, remember that is based on his 2015 taxes. His 2016 taxes is going to set what he's going to pay in 2018. So if he filed married separate in 2015 and married separate in 2016, he's going to have to change both. That's going to be two amended tax returns. And then I would suggest you file your 2017 taxes as married joint. So why don't we explain now, Justin, how IRMA works with these earnings levels and how they're a cliff. Make sure our listeners know that. $1 over these amounts, you're stuck paying higher premiums all year.
So basically, they break it down into five categories. And most, I think we're at about 95% of people fall in the first category right now. Of course, they're trying to push more people into the other categories. But the first category is what most people pay. And that's $134 for your Medicare premium. And if you earn, and they break it down, actually, there's to make it more complicated, there's five categories for married filing jointly or individuals, okay? And there's a separate category for those who are married filing separately.
Which is what she's being hit by.
Yeah, and that gets really ugly on that one. So I think we should probably focus
start
on
with the first
the
one.
The first one, yeah. Yeah, so if you're an individual and you're earning less, or your MAGI, your modified adjusted gross income, is less than $85,000, or if you're married filing jointly and it's twice that, or $170,000, then your premium's $134 a month.
And that's what pretty much everybody
most
pays.
Most people pays that, yeah.
Most people fall into that category, but there are people who earn more than that.
And let's just remember, we're talking about Part B premiums only at this point. These do affect your prescription drug coverage also, so we'll talk about that in a second. So as you earn more income, they force you into paying more Part B premiums. So they call that $134 the standard premium. Okay, and they just add a certain dollar amount above that as you earn more income.
$85,000 and $1 if you're single. Just $1 more pushes you over. This isn't a progressive rate. It's a cliff rate.
Right. And it's not $85,000 of earned income.
It's MAGI.
It's MAGI, which includes a ton of stuff.
Do you want to talk
about it? Including tax-free income. So a lot of people think they can buy a tax-free municipal bond
and it won't
impact their MAGI.
And capital gains, too.
Capital gains.
Yeah, which is
not
the scary
Roth
one.
IRA distributions, though.
No, not Roth, and not untaxed Social Security does not go into that MAGI. It goes into other ones, but not this one. So if you're just receiving Social Security, you probably won't be falling into that category. Okay. So it like he was saying, there's a cliff. So if you're single and you earn $85,000 and $1, sorry, then your premium boosts up by $53.50. And on the other end, for married filing jointly couples, it goes from 170 to 214. So if you earn anything over $170,000, between $214,000 and you pay $53.50 more. It continues up like that. I don't want to bore people with all the information on that, but essentially, as you move up to the fifth level, you could be paying the $134 standard premium amount, but all the way up to an additional $294.60 per month simply for your Part B. It affects your prescription drug plan also, so they'll tack on up to an additional $76.20 per month simply on that. Where it really hurts above and beyond that, and the situation that our listener is in, is she's filing separately, and there's only three categories for that, and they're cliffs again, and it jumps up really fast. So if you are an individual, or individuals, so you're filing separately,
right,
with $85,000 or less, you pay that standard $134. A dollar above that, you jump right up to an additional $214.
And that's where he is.
Yep.
So he must be $1 above $85,000. If they have combined income, though, of less than $170,000,
yep,
if they file amended returns, they won't be hit by IRMA at all, folks. None whatsoever. They'll just pay the $134 each. And in this case, it's only the husband filing right now. He'll pay $134. But because he filed married separate and he obviously earned $1 more than $85,000, he has to pay the $134 plus an additional $214 in Medicare Part B, plus how much more for prescription D?
An additional $55.20.
So he's
on top of the
on
premium.
On top of the 214, on top of the 134.
On top of the regular premium plan.
Correct.
For Part D. So yeah, they're just getting nailed.
Oh, that's right. On top of the regular Part D premium. So you can see this is like a layer cake of penalties. That's why I say, Chris, IRMA is one mean witch. And what these people need to do is file 2 amended tax returns and then probably keep filing married. I don't know why people file married separate. Do you know, Chris?
Well, occasionally there is a tax advantage.
Is there?
It's pretty rare. Some people do it.
But
thinking,
if you're both high earners, sometimes it works. That's one of
right,
them.
Both high earners, sometimes it works. A high and a low earner, it's a bad idea
generally.
But yeah, it's for a very small set of people, but then they forget about side effects like Irma, which is exactly what bit them.
Yep.
They process their taxes as they may have for quite a long time with some tax advantage. As soon as they got to Medicare age, then things like Irma rise up from the grave.
From the dead. This is a good Halloween story. When we come back, Peter's going to be with us. He's going to be answering a Medicare question from, we think, a Colorado listener on prescription pot D. We will get back to that when we return. And Justin, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Great. Yeah. So we'll be with Peter Trozen from Trozen Insurance Agency after this to answer another Medicare question. When we come back, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 1935. Let's see. This song was written for the British film Roadhouse in 1934. But didn't become popular until July of 1935. So we'll hear what song that is after we come back from this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. So we lead in this segment with one of the top songs from 1935, which is a little song called What a Little Moonlight Will Do. It's eventually going to be sung by Billie Holiday, but this, as we have found, most songs from 1935 actually have a long introduction with instrumental only before they get to the singing. And we've got things to talk about on the show here, so I'm going to cut Billie Holiday off. But this particular song has become a jazz standard. It's been covered many times through the years by folks like Peggy Lee and Crystal Gayle, actually as recently as 1980. So What a Little Moonlight Will Do, from back in 1935. So I'm not sure what it is. I don't think people can hear it. But every Monday, while we're doing the show, the next door neighbor blows leaves.
I think he knows
we're
recording.
I don't know what the deal is.
I don't get it either. But it's very annoying.
How many leaves can a person blow in a season?
I have no idea, but he's constantly doing it.
I agree. So hopefully it isn't really picked. I don't think it's really picked up on the mic. So we can hear it, however. So back to our second.
Well, we want to introduce Pete.
I know. Medicare show, right?
Yep.
We will.
Okay.
About now. But we got to tell people what we're talking about.
True.
Medicare.
Yes.
Right?
Welcome
another
back.
Show.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. I am Jim Salnia, and joining me is Chris Stein. And in a minute, we're going to introduce Peter Trozen. I always
just say Trozen.
Trozen.
Yeah.
Trozen.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
Well, you kind of give that weird accentuating the second syllable thing.
I break it into syllables.
Yeah.
Trozen.
Yeah. Perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah.
We're going to introduce Pete again in a minute. He is going to come on and talk about Medicare. But I do want to bring our listeners up to date. This is the Retirement and IRA Show. And Chris and I are practicing financial planners right here in Northern Colorado. We have our main office in Fort Collins, in the Old Town area of Fort Collins. And we have satellite meeting rooms. One is at I-25 and 34 in the Centura area. And the other is off of Arapahoe Road in Boulder. And if anybody ever wanted to meet, we call it a coffee and a second opinion, where you can meet with us and just talk, get to know us a little, see if there's anything that we can help you with as you try to navigate everything that retirement throws at you. Again, we have Peter on to talk about Medicare, but Medicare, Social Security, PARA, IRAs, Roth IRAs, 401ks, all of these are extremely difficult items for a lot of people to fully understand and comprehend. And it just so happens to be this is what we specialize in as we work with people. So if anybody out there wants to get a complimentary coffee and a second opinion, come in and chat with us. If you come to the Fort Collins office, you do get a cup of coffee. If you come to the other offices, I know they have water. I really wouldn't trust their coffee. It doesn't look too good to me. But the water is actually quite tasty. But I've never tried the coffee. I saw you laughing there, Chris. It just looks like it's in the pot that they make at 8 o'clock in the morning and leave all day. It just is, it doesn't strike me as fresh brewed cup of morning Joe. But if you want it, you can more than welcome.
But their water is tasty.
The water is fine. It tastes like water. But the coffee I wouldn't trust. Doesn't look safe. Doesn't look fresh. Put it that way. But I'm a coffee snob, so I like a good fresh cup of coffee.
I noticed you didn't order in your... your little gopher's
my
gone.
My gopher's gone.
I see, yeah.
For those who don't know, the person who used to bring me my Starbucks coffee is studying for the bar exam, has to run off and become an attorney now, and apparently it's beneath him to bring me coffee anymore.
Well, good for him. Congratulations to Andrew.
So we do wish Andrew good luck as he embarks on trying to become an attorney, but it has left a huge void in the office of a coffee deliveryman. So I have no Starbucks, and no one in the office offered to go get me a coffee.
So sad.
It is sad, especially because they forget who signs their paychecks. It's not Starbucks.
Maybe they sign a bigger paycheck, and they'll do whatever you want.
True, but that would be bribery.
I think it's more of an employment relationship, but you can call it whatever you want. So let's bring Pete on.
Okay.
He's been waiting very patiently.
Waiting
to speak.
Very quietly in the background. Peter, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. Great. Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah. Raked a lot of leaves.
Yeah. Well, at least
did you blow the leaves with the leaf blower?
With no blowers.
Okay. No blowers. But for those who don't know, Peter is a new addition to the show. You have an office, Peter, just two blocks east of my office here in Old Town Fort Collins, right off of Mulberry Street. And for goodness now, probably a long time, a hell of a long time, I guess we could say, you've been working in Medicare and health insurance.
I have. For over 30 years, I've been working in Medicare and health insurance, and last 2 years, I decided to totally specialize in Medicare only now.
In just Medicare. And a couple of weeks ago when we had you on the radio show, we asked listeners to email us Medicare questions. We did get the one from Texas on Irma that we answered in the previous segment. And now we have one. I'm assuming they're from Colorado, but they never said where they're from. I guess we could make up a state that you need a star for, Chris, and just pretend they're from there.
Let's not do that.
Let's not do that. Okay.
Keep the validity of the map, the reliability of the map. Yeah.
So this is a stateless person, but I think the question transcends state barriers. How's that? Sounds impressive.
It does.
You like that? Okay, it begins. I'm losing my group coverage and need to enroll in Medicare. How is this going to impact my prescription drug coverage? I'm trying to figure this all out. But honestly, it's all Greek to me. And Greek is a very hard language.
It is.
You know, not only to write, but to read and speak. Do you ever see the writing in Greek? It's Greek, man. It's just little symbols.
Are you done?
Well, that's where the saying came
from. I know. Can we let Peter speak to the question?
I suppose. Pete, can you decipher...
He prefers Peter. Don't you remember from the last show?
Oh, darn. Peter, can you decipher Greek for this person? And really, I guess, what does he have to do? Where does he start evaluating his prescription drug coverage?
There's basically four phases of coverage when you get a Medicare drug plan. It's called Part D, D for drugs. And so the first phase is meeting your deductible. Now, not every plan has a deductible. Some plans waive the deductible. But I'll go through what Medicare says you have to have as a minimum, okay? So your plan could be better than this, but it can be no worse than the following, which is you have a $405 deductible for the year. And so that's stage one. Once you've met that, then you go into the second stage, which is called the initial coverage. And that's where you start paying copays and coinsurances. Now, I got a question for you.
Uh-oh. That's for you, Chris.
What?
He has a question for you.
I think he was looking at you, Jim.
No, he was looking right at you.
So do you know the difference between a copay and coinsurance?
Oh, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I'll let you
go. I thought you were pointing at me.
No, you can go.
Copay is a dollar amount and coinsurance is a percentage.
Good job. Is that 100%.
See? Nice.
Ding, 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 ding.
You pass.
Ding, ding,
ding.
Look, I have gold stars I can give to myself here.
So it's generally better to have a copay because it's a flat amount. So no matter how much the drug costs, say you have a $35 copay, you pay that $35.
Now, even if the drug is $36?
Technically, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Just asking. But if it's $3,006, you still pay $35.
Nice.
Okay. I'm guessing.
Well, you don't have to guess. We just told you how copays work.
Okay.
It's a dollar amount.
Right. Or as a coinsurance, that's a percentage, as Chris correctly answered. So if you had a coinsurance of 25% and you had a $1,000 drug, you'd be paying $250. Mm. Now, you're going to be in that second stage until the total cost of your drugs reaches $3,750. Now, that's not how much you've spent. That is the actual cost of the drugs.
Your cost and Medicare's cost.
It's the total cost.
Yeah.
Okay.
And not total retail. It's the total negotiated price that Medicare has gotten for the drug, correct? Because sometimes, the retail prices of a lot of these drugs are exorbitantly high, but the negotiated contract rate, much lower.
Right. And and Medicare doesn't actually negotiate. They're currently prohibited by law from negotiating with the drug manufacturers.
Oh, that's true.
So
yeah,
it's actually the drug manufacturers negotiating with the separate insurance companies.
So right. So I misspoke. You're absolutely right. Glad to remind everyone of that. Medicare doesn't do the negotiation, but the insurance company supplying the Medicare plan will individually negotiate with the drug companies.
That is correct.
So it's that negotiated amount that goes towards this $3,750, correct?
Right.
Okay.
And so once you reach that magic $3,750, then you go into stage three, which is formerly known as the coverage gap, but most people call it the donut hole.
The donut hole, yeah.
Yeah, the dreaded donut hole. Now the good news is the donut hole is shrinking, getting smaller each year. And so next year it's going to be smaller than this year. 2019, it'll be smaller yet. And in 2020, it completely goes away. I don't know if you knew that.
Didn't know that?
Yes, I knew
that. But remind people how the donut hole works, because that's the scary part.
Okay. So actually for next year, it won't be all that bad. But the way that it works is when you get into the donut hole, you pay no more than 35% coinsurance for brand name drugs and no more than 44% coinsurance for generic drugs.
But no longer do you have maybe some small $20 copay. You're on this percentage, and it's a fairly significant percentage of the drug cost.
That's correct.
And that's why people call it kind of this coverage gap, where you're out. There is coverage, but the out-of-pocket amount that you're paying is significantly higher than in the first couple of tiers, or at least in the second tier. The first tier, it's all on you, but right?
Right.
Is that why it's kind of scary for people, is suddenly they're paying a lot more in this phase or in this range of dollar amounts.
That's correct. And in the past, that percentage that you had to pay was a lot higher. Now it's getting smaller and smaller, so it's getting more manageable.
That's good.
So you're going to stay in that donut hole until your total out-of-pocket costs reach $5,000.
Whoa, that's a big donut hole.
Yes.
Because out-of-pocket $5,000 means that the actual drug cost is very significantly higher than that.
All this donut hole talk's making me hungry for munchkins.
Goes with your coffee fetish, too.
It does. Well, I'm thinking Dunkin' Munchkin.
Well, I prefer the Lamar's donut holes, just so you know. Well, I know you're a Dunkin' Donuts guy, but not to get, we shouldn't get Pater off track here. So much, although both of us love donuts and donut holes.
Much cuter name, Munchkin, as opposed to donut holes.
I get it. Okay, I'll give you that. The name's cool.
Now, when I said your total out-of-pocket costs reach $5,000, I actually misled you, though not on purpose. I'm using Medicare's terminology. In fact, Medicare's terminology is when your true out-of-pocket cost reaches $5,000, but it's really not your true out-of-pocket. And here's why. Remember that you're paying 35% during the donut hole.
Mm-hmm. Munchkin.
Now, the other 65%, where do you suppose that's coming from?
Taxpayers?
No.
No. It's actually the drug manufacturers are giving a discount. They voluntarily, in air quotes, agreed to give a discount. And so that 65% that they're giving a discount on is actually counted towards as if you'd paid it.
And are the drug manufacturers essentially paying the entire amount?
The drug manufacturer.
Of that 65 through 65, a reduction?
That 65, yes, exactly. Oh.
So was there a time when the donut hole, during the donut hole, you were 100% out of pocket for those costs? Did that occur?
Ooh, I'm trying.
Because I know the drug manufacturers haven't always agreed to do this weird reduction thing.
Yeah, I think at one time it might have been, we're going back a number of years that I don't remember now exactly what word
it was. If it wasn't all of it, it was a significant portion, and that was essentially the gap, saying, well, you're on your own now for a while before the coverage kicks back in. And that was when the munchkin was the scariest, the donut hole in Jim's terminology.
I like munchkin.
Okay. That's interesting. I didn't know that's how it worked. Just like 2 weeks ago. We learned all kinds of new things on the show. That's why we had you back, Peter. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me back. Yeah. So, so that's basically, at that point, you reach the fourth stage, which is called a catastrophic. And at that point, you pay no more than 5% of the cost of the drug, no matter how much it is.
And no matter which Part D plan you're on.
Correct.
Okay. And do these numbers apply, or is this structure the same on all the Part D policies? And the only difference is the copay amounts, coinsurance amounts, and that sort of thing. But the $3,750 and the $5,000, those are consistent from plan to plan?
That is consistent, yes.
Oh, so the only variations are which drugs get which copay and which coinsurance along the way. But the basic structure of this four-tiered system is consistent through all the plans.
Yes, it is.
Interesting.
And in fact, that leads us into the next thing I want to talk about, which is formularies.
Mm-hmm.
So a formulary is simply a list of all the drugs that that particular plan, insurance plan, will cover. Now, the plan has to go through each therapeutic category, and there's actually a law that says that for each therapeutic category, the insurance company must provide the minimum of two drugs.
So every plan, it's not like some plans don't cover medications for something. It's just that different plans will have slightly different choices for different types of health issues. Is that a true statement?
That is a true statement, and also some plans will have more choices. Some plans may have a minimum of those just two drugs, while others may have a dozen drugs. And it also depends on what kind of therapeutic category we're talking about. So if we're talking about high blood pressure or cholesterol, there's a lot of choices there. Mm-hmm. But then some of the more esoteric things, there may be only two or three choices.
That's good to know, because I think there's a lot of people out there that believe that under certain Part D plans, if you come down with a certain illness, if you're in the wrong plan, there isn't a medication in the plan for that specific thing. So I think it's good for people to realize that no matter which plan you pick, there's going to be something from a medicine related, if there is such a medicine for your condition, there'll be something that's covered. May not be what you prefer, or may not be at the price that you might have, you know, better at on another plan, but at least it will be covered. There'll be some medication there for your issue that will be part of the plan.
Right, and it may not be as effective as another medication.
But there's something there. Okay.
I think the underlying takeaway of this for a listener who wondered, when you're working for an employer, your drug plan is what they're giving you. It's not too often right. You have choice upon choice upon choice.
Right.
You got this, you got that, you got a donut hole, you got a munchkin, you're getting hungry. You're not getting all of that. He is on an employer plan. He's losing his group coverage. I'm guessing he's either leaving employment or at 65, his group coverage no longer covers him. He's being forced to go on Medicare, and now all of a sudden, what was just one, hey, this is what your drug benefit is now being replaced with many, many different choices, where he's got to base it on probably where he lives. And again, we're assuming Colorado, but we're not sure where he lives, what his drugs are right now, what his future drugs are going to be, what his out-of-pocket expenses are going to be, if it's a copay, if it's a co-insurance. So where do you go? Because it's probably still Greek for him. We've answered a question for him, but I think we answered it in Greece, Greek, whatever it is. How do we answer it in English? Where can he go besides your office, which I know he can do, and you can tell everyone how to reach you? But are there, does Medicare help you? Do they have to go to someone like you? Are there agencies that can help him? Where does he get the help for him to sit down, figure out, these are the drugs I'm on, I've now got all these different choices, which one is right for me?
Great question, Jim.
Thank you.
So the...
Not a good question, a great question.
Don't get too high on yourself.
The best place to go to is Medicare.gov, and that's Medicare's own website, and they have every single plan that's out there. And so you go in there, you put in your zip code, and then you put in the medications that you're taking. You put in your favorite pharmacies. You can put up to two pharmacies that you like to go to. And then it'll show you all the plans, and it'll rank them in order of which one it thinks is going to work best for you.
And then if you want this plan, do you get it right there on the web, or do you take that information with you and go to someone like your firm, and you can put them in that plan?
Either one.
Either one. So you can get them right there online. Interesting. I didn't know that. Did you?
No.
They give you a phone number. And you can call the insurance company directly.
Oh, you have to call them. Okay. Mm-hmm. But that's just as easy almost as doing it online.
Probably easier. trying to navigate the technology isn't always so simple.
Now, one thing that I've heard, Pete, and I know we only have a few minutes left, there are some people entering Medicare who aren't on any drugs, and they think they're going to save money and not enroll in a drug plan because you have to pay for the drug plan. But I was told years ago by someone that if you run into any clients in that situation, have them enroll in the lowest cost Medicare drug plan they can find, or they're going to be hit with steep penalties. Can you explain that in case our listener decides, I don't need drugs, I'll skip it?
The penalty is 1% for every month that you are not enrolled in a qualified Part D drug. And it's 1% of the average national price, which is around $35. So if you're out for 12 months without a drug plan, that works out to 12% per year, obviously. And you're absolutely right. You should just take the cheapest plan that you can find, which for next year will be $20.40. And that just gives you insurance and peace of mind that if something bad happens, that you're going to be covered. And I've got a great story for you illustrating that. A couple of years ago, a friend of mine that came to me, and I signed him up for a Medicare supplement. And then I said, okay, now let's talk about your prescription drugs. And he says, I don't need any. I'm not on any medications. I said, well, but there's this penalty that you're going to have to pay. And he says, I don't care. He talks like that. Mm-hmm. And so I finally dropped it. I didn't argue with him. Now, the irony is this guy is a former pharmacist.
Oh.
So he should know better. But he had his mind made up. He's not taking any drugs, and he was rather take the penalty than pay the premium. Well, just a little while later, my wife actually sweet-talked them a few weeks later into signing up. And to make a long story short, he had ended up having surgery, heart surgery, a few months after that, $450,000. And he was so glad that we had talked him into buying a prescription drug plan because he says that would have killed me. He had huge drug expenses that were totally unexpected.
Wow. Well, if anybody needs to reach you, Pete, what is your phone number?
970-224-5500. Again, that's 970-224-5500.
Perfect. And we will be back next week with one more show before Turkey Day. But anything else you need to add, Chris?
No. If you have anybody has any questions about Medicare or any of the other retirement topics we cover here, please get a hold of us. JimHelps.com is the best place to go. And until next week, hope everybody has a good week and watch out for the snow.
Snow?
Yeah. Tonight.
Tonight?
Tonight.
I'll be damned.
So okay. We'll talk to you. We'll see on Saturday if it actually came true. Okay. We're recording this on Monday. So we'll talk to everybody next week here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit JimHelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.